Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not gonna just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, ARMOIRE. /ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
In the fall of 2001, approximately 40,000 students attended Penn State at the main campus in State College, Pennsylvania. On Halloween, thousands of them donned costumes and went to celebrate with friends at bars, clubs, and off-campus apartments. This was less than 2 months after the September 11th terrorist attacks, and many students were looking for an opportunity to escape from the nonstop news reports of violence and death. Hyun Jong Cindy Song was one of these students. The 21-year-old integrative arts major was set to graduate the following spring and usually didn't party much during the week. But even though it was a Wednesday, it was also Halloween, so Cindy donned a bunny outfit and went to go clubbing with friends. By all accounts, she had a great night. But in the early hours of November 1st, 2001, something happened to Cindy Song, and she's never been seen alive again. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Hyun Jong Cindy Song. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Hyun Jong Cindy Song was born on February 25th, 1980 in Seoul, South Korea. Not much information is publicly available about her childhood, but when she was 15 years old, she came to America to attend high school, staying with her aunt and uncle in Springfield, Virginia, which coincidentally is the next county over from where we're sitting right now.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Mm. Also a coincidence, and the reason I wanted to cover this case, is after high school, Cindy attended college at Penn State University at their main campus in State College, Pennsylvania. Now, this is where you went to college as well, Ethan.
That's right.
Yeah, and you were there at the same time.
I was, yeah. And I remember seeing her picture plastered all over the news. It was everywhere on campus, but I remember very little about the details of the case. I don't know whether that was just because I was in college.
Absorbed 21-year-old?
Yeah, and trying to make it through college. Doing my own thing, but.
So it's crazy to me because I went to JMU, go Dukes, and my school, don't roll your eyes at me, my school was half the size of yours. So you had in, like I said, in 2001, like 40,000 people attended Penn State, about 20,000 attended JMU. So very different experiences. And I can't imagine somebody just going missing at JMU when I was there and not knowing everything about it.
I mean, yeah, you said it yourself, 40,000 yeah. people, you know, it's a city that comes in every fall and everybody's doing their own thing. And yeah, I mean, I don't remember any of the details about it. Like I said, I remember news stories covering it, but we were all just doing our own thing, trying to graduate, and nobody really,
You had a girlfriend at the time, of course. I mean, what about like your girlfriend or your female friends? Were they concerned?
No. Nobody was.
You guys are bonkers. I want to talk more about that later after we like get more into the case because that's insane to me.
Okay.
So October 31st, 2001 was the first semester of Cindy's senior year at Penn State, and it was the beginning of our junior year.
Right.
I don't know if you remember what you did on Halloween that year.
I do not. No idea.
You're like my sister who, you know, so for those of you who listened to our first episode on Victor Shoemaker, that happened in my neighborhood. And we knew the father, Victor Shoemaker Sr. And my sister texted me after she listened to the episode. And she's like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't remember anything about this or that guy.
So like her, I have no recollection of what I was doing for Halloween back in 2001.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Cindy dressed in a bunny costume and joined her friends, Stacy Paik and Lisa Kim, at a college club called Players Nightclub, which was located in the 100 block of West College Avenue. All right. Now, the way this show works is I find the cases and research them, and I don't tell you about them before we start recording
right.
because I just want to get your authentic gut reactions to my stories. But when I was researching this case, I texted you at work and I asked if you remember the Players Nightclub, and you said you did.
I do.
So I didn't want to ask follow-up questions then, but now I do. Can you tell our listeners who may not be familiar with Penn State in the early 2000s a little bit about Players Nightclub?
No, because I never went.
You can't really? You never went once?
No.
But you were a player.
It's very amusing, but no, I was not.
So, like, what type of place was it? Was it, I mean, okay, obviously it was a nightclub.
Yeah.
But was it for college kids, like, exclusively, or was this a situation where, like, people in their late 20s and 30s and stuff would go and try to pick up?
No, that was one of the places where it was just college kids would go.
Okay.
And so there were a lot of other bars where you would find the older crowd weirdly sitting in corners and trying to hit on
undergrads.
Gross. But Players was definitely not one of them. It was very much a nightclub, loud music, dancing.
So it makes sense that, you know, that a 21-year-old girl would go out with two girlfriends.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah,
you know, just to dance and have a fun night.
Yeah.
So was it known as like a sketchy place, or was it just a pretty innocuous, just go out and dance place?
It was just a go out and dance place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and that makes sense because whatever eventually happened to Cindy didn't happen there. Mm-hmm. She and her friends stayed until around 2 a.m., at which point they went back to a friend's apartment and played video games. Just so like cute and wholesome.
Yeah.
I can't even deal with it. At 4 a.m., Stacy drove Cindy home. She dropped her off, but didn't stay to make sure Cindy made it inside. Remember, this is 2001, before the age of social media and constant connection. Cindy was a full-time student with two jobs, and she lived in an off-campus apartment. Not only that, but her parents were in South Korea, so presumably they didn't talk daily. So no one immediately thought anything was wrong when a few days passed without anyone hearing from her. Now, I've told you this before, but my grandmother passed away while I was in college as well. And it happened to be the day after spring break ended that I found out. So I was back at school, but I hadn't gone to any classes yet. So I immediately flew to Florida and didn't return to school until a week after spring break was over. And I didn't have a roommate at the time, so none of my friends knew where I was or what had happened. I notified my professors and my job, so no one rang any alarm bells, but like it wasn't weird. And I think it's important to impress this upon our younger listeners who just don't understand how we used to live.
Yeah, before the days of constant contact.
Yeah, because it didn't occur to me to like, you know, tell any of my friends at school what had happened.
Right.
You know, I just bolted. Like, I, you know, I was thinking about my grandmother and my family. And so I was just gone. And you know, I got back and everybody's like, what the hell happened to you?
but nobody reported you missing or anything.
No, exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. And because, you know, I did tell, like I said, I told my professors and my job, like, they didn't obviously think anything was wrong. And so, yeah, it's not weird to me at that time that her friends just would be like, oh, I don't know, I haven't heard about Cindy. And as you pointed out, I mean, we're talking about very self-absorbed college students.
Clearly,
too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So Cindy did have a roommate, Yeonju, who went by Catherine, who was visiting family in Philadelphia over Halloween.
Oh, so nobody was at her apartment.
Exactly.
Either.
So that morning of November 1st, when Cindy came home, her roommate wasn't there. She came home alone. She returned on the afternoon of the 1st and expected to see Cindy at the apartment, but it wasn't super weird that she wasn't there because, again, she had two jobs and, you know, friends and she was busy.
Yeah, it's college.
Yeah. However, on Saturday, Halloween was Wednesday, and then November 1st when her roommate got back was Thursday.
Okay.
But then by Saturday, Cindy didn't show up for her shift at a local Korean restaurant, so people started to realize something was wrong. But that day, friends called the police and reported Cindy missing. Unfortunately, as we often see in cases of missing adults, Ferguson Township Police didn't seem to initially take the report very seriously. Because it was the weekend, the report went to patrol, and it didn't even land on a detective's desk until that Monday. So not only have we lost Thursday, all of Thursday, because she, you know, was last seen at 4 a.m.
Right.
So we lost Thursday, we lost Friday, we lost, let's say, half of Saturday before they reported her missing. Mm-hmm. We lost the rest of Saturday, and we lost Sunday. Okay. So Monday.
Giving Ferguson Township the benefit of the doubt.
Here we go.
Like you said, she's a college student. It's not uncommon for college students to not necessarily go missing, but not show up to a job, maybe sleeping somewhere at a boyfriend's place, or, you know, just generally not being home. As you said, this is before social media, before constant contact. So different time.
Okay.
Different place.
But on the flip just side,
giving Ferguson Township the benefit of the doubt at this point.
Think about every adult missing persons case that does not end up with them just showing up. This is a common denominator of the police not taking it seriously. So to me, it makes sense to err on the side of caution. And I understand resources and blah, blah, blah. And that's a whole other podcast.
Yes.
But I just feel like that's a long time to lose in a missing persons case.
Oh, it certainly is, you know, but I just want to just giving them the benefit of the doubt that I don't want to say it's not an unusual or that it is a common thing to occur, but
yeah,
you know,
I know.
It's college.
Yeah, I got you.
It's a college township. It's college kids going off and doing their own thing. So
when I first started reading about this case and that Stacy didn't wait to see if Cindy had made it back inside, I was like, okay, that's it. She got snatched. Like, you know, and that's the lesson. Always wait until your friends get inside.
Right.
And that is a lesson. But so like definitely always wait until your friends get inside.
Yeah.
But when friends and police went through her apartment, and just to clarify, because a lot of things that I read said that friends and police went through her apartment, which seemed a little weird to me. I think they mean her roommate. I think it was Catherine, her roommate,
probably who went through. Yeah, and probably let the police come in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so when they went through her apartment together, there was evidence that Cindy did actually make it in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Cindy had been wearing false eyelashes as part of her costume, and when police searched her apartment on Monday, November 5th, they found those on her bathroom sink.
Okay.
They also found her backpack that she normally carried with her and that she had that night on Halloween. And most alarmingly, they found her cell phone, which was powered off. What they didn't find was Cindy's purse, her wallet, her keys, or the bunny costume, either other than the eyelashes. They also saw no signs of struggle or any other foul play. And again, her roommate had been back for a couple days by this point and didn't say, oh, it looks like, you know, somebody got kidnapped from our apartment. Like, she didn't think anything was weird at all, other than Cindy not being there. So based on this, it appears that Cindy left her apartment willingly, but didn't necessarily plan to be gone for long. She took her keys and her purse, locking her door from the outside, but she left her phone behind. She also didn't change out of her bunny costume.
Right. No change of clothes brought with her.
Exactly. Now, before we go any further, let's talk about the costume a little bit so that you have an idea of what this actually looked like.
Okay.
And you're laughing because I think when you say a 21-year-old college girl in a bunny costume, like you're probably thinking—
all kinds of visions come into my head.
Yeah, something kind of Playboy bunny-ish. But that's not what this was. Her costume was a white tennis skirt with a little bunny tail attached to it, a pink tank top, and not even like a very revealing one, and a bunny ear headband. Her friend Lisa Kim, who was with her that night, told Unsolved Mysteries, quote, she had bunny ears and a tail that she had bought. It was a very cute outfit. It wasn't like a sexy outfit. It was a very cute outfit. That was her thing. She was very cute. She liked to look cute. So again, she was basically wearing normal clothes, which fits with the theory that she was just popping out of the apartment. So let's assume that she left shortly after being dropped off. Our relationships with cell phones were different in 2001. You would carry it with you, but there wasn't really anything to do with it other than make calls or play that weird snake game. So it wasn't...
I didn't even have a cell phone back then.
You didn't have it like junior year?
No, I didn't have a cell phone until after college.
I had a cell phone when I graduated high school.
I did not. I didn't even have a computer until I graduated high school.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. But so, you know, so back then, so you just, yeah, you did, you completely can understand going to a 24-hour store and not having a cell phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because back then it would make sense that Cindy would just leave it behind if she was just popping out for a few minutes, because, like, who was she going to call?
Right.
Of course, theories immediately started flying around. Cindy's mother came over from Korea to search for her daughter, and she brought Cindy's brother with her. Cindy had gone through a rough breakup about a month prior to her disappearance, and her family speculated that Cindy could have committed suicide or decided to leave because of this.
That seems like a jump.
Yeah. Well, Cindy's friends thought it was a jump, too. They said that, yes, she had been upset about the breakup, but it was a month ago, and she had been dealing with it.
What level of breakup are we talking about here?
And it was a bad breakup. So according to an article on news.com.au, she was in therapy and had even been taking medication to deal with this. She and her boyfriend lived together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so her roommate, Catherine, had moved in after her boyfriend had moved out.
So it was a pretty serious relationship.
A big deal. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But beyond that, her friends were sure she was also not the type of person to just up and leave. And side note, who would walk away from their life or commit suicide while wearing a bunny tail? In addition to that, a search of her apartment revealed that she had bought a new computer that was due to be delivered in a few days, and she had a ticket for a Britney Spears concert the next week.
That's pretty big.
You know, you're being sarcastic, but this is a ticket for Britney Spears in 2001, and that was a huge deal.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Like, now I understand why she was working two jobs, because that must have cost, like, a ton of money.
Yeah, for a college student, absolutely. Yeah.
So at this point, police are thinking that the most likely answer is that Cindy popped out to a 24-hour grocery store to grab something quickly, and someone got a hold of her, either on her way there or her way back. There was a giant grocery store right by her house, and Cindy was known to go there at all hours of the night to pick up snacks and what have you. But Cindy's credit cards hadn't been used there, and by the time detectives went to the store to try to get surveillance tape, there was nothing from that night. Given the lack of clues in Cindy's disappearance, the police have to look at a variety of different possibilities. Stranger abductions are exceedingly rare, so investigators started looking into the people in Cindy's life. Detective Brian Sprinkle told WTAJ, the local CBS affiliate, quote, "We interviewed all her friends, coworkers, and there is nothing to indicate that anybody close to her was involved in this," end quote. They also interviewed Cindy's ex-boyfriend, Patrick, but according to Sprinkle, quote, "there wasn't any indication that he was involved in any way."
Yeah, I mean, that would have been my first thought, would be to go to the ex-boyfriend.
Of course, right? Because it, you know, it was a bad breakup and who knows. But what I will say is that beyond that quote saying, yeah, he didn't have anything to do with it, there isn't really any more information that I was able to find on the ex-boyfriend.
Other than his name was Patrick.
Yeah, and, you know, that he was, but, like, nobody said why they determined that he didn't have anything to do with it or anything.
Now, maybe this comes up later. Do any of her friends or family members point to him?
No, not that I saw.
So no other suspicion. He was basically just ruled out.
Yeah, I mean, and, yeah, he doesn't really come up again, honestly, after this.
Interesting.
Yeah. At one point, they even speculate that her disappearance could have been drug-related.
Why?
So this is based on diary entries that reveal that Cindy and her friends had experimented with marijuana and ecstasy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like every other college student?
Exactly. And that's why that theory was very quickly ruled out.
Yeah.
However, not long after Cindy's disappearance, authorities would receive a much more disturbing lead. Miles away in Philadelphia's Chinatown, a woman was out walking her dog at night when she claims to have seen a woman matching Song's description being forced into a car while screaming for help. The witness says she attempted to intervene but was chased off by the man who told her to mind her own business. Police were dubious that the sighting was actually of Cindy simply due to the distance between State College and Philadelphia, but nevertheless, they released a sketch of the man the witness claims to have seen.
Well, Philadelphia isn't that far away from Penn State. I know you said 200 miles, but, you know, it was nothing for us as college students to go to either Pittsburgh or Philly for a weekend or whatever. It's not terribly far away.
Right.
So it's not crazy to think that she could have been in Philadelphia.
Right. And if the theory is that she was kidnapped, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily want to keep her in State College.
Yeah.
While people are looking for her.
Right.
But nothing ended up coming of this, and eventually the witnesses' statements contradict themselves, and the sighting is considered to be a dead end. Soon, police seemingly came to the conclusion that Cindy was kidnapped and murdered, and efforts began to focus on body retrieval.
So I know you say soon, but do we know how soon?
I mean, it seems pretty quickly, like within a few weeks, with her not showing back up.
It just seems like another leap or a pretty big assumption to go from, you know, she's missing or has been kidnapped to, well, we don't have any leads, so she must be dead. I mean, I'm no expert on missing persons cases, but that seems pretty narrow-minded to just start looking for a body right away.
Yeah, but apparently that's what they did. In the days and weeks after her disappearance, the dumpsters around her neighborhood were searched, as were the local woods. They even did aerial searches, but nothing was found.
Yeah, and I mean, I have no problem with the police doing those searches, you know, to rule anything out. But again, it seems just completely narrow-minded to just abandon the missing persons case and go to a body retrieval.
Yeah, well, tensions were high back in State College. Cindy's family immediately took action upon arriving stateside, and one of the first things that they did was clean out Cindy's apartment, which destroyed any potential physical evidence that may have been left behind. And this didn't exactly get the relationship with the police off to a good start. You never want an apartment like this to be cleaned out, you know, when somebody's still missing, because again, just like I said, you know, potential physical evidence. But there is no indication that anything happened to Cindy in the apartment.
Right. And the police have already been through it.
Yeah, they've been through it. They'd searched it. So, the chance that there is actually physical evidence left in that apartment before her parents came and cleaned it out, I think seems pretty low.
Yeah. And you would think that the police probably would have seen something the first go around.
Yeah. Or the roommate who had been living there.
Right.
The Song family also joined up with Penn State student groups, including the Black Caucus and the Korean Undergraduate Students Association and community members to form the Coalition for the Search for Cindy Song.
Again, going back to how self-absorbed I was.
You had
no idea.
Yeah, okay. On January 31st, 2002, the group held a press conference in which they were highly critical of both Penn State and the Ferguson Township Police Department. According to an article in the Daily Collegian, the Song family spokesperson, Jin Han, said at the press conference, quote, "Words cannot begin to express the agony the Song family has felt since the disappearance of their daughter. This has been compounded by the poor investigation." The group was skeptical that authorities were putting enough resources toward finding Cindy. They cited the case of Alicia Kozakowicz, a 13-year-old from Pittsburgh who disappeared on New Year's Day. In this case, the FBI put 50 agents on it, and Kozakowicz was found 3 days later in another state. The group also criticized the school's response. Black Caucus Vice President Takeem Morgan said, quote, "Cindy Song is somebody's child. She is somebody's sister, and she is someone's friend. There is a lack of urgency in this case, and that is unacceptable," end quote. He went on to say, quote, "When a student becomes missing, it is the university that is responsible for the safe return of that student," end quote. Penn State, unsurprisingly, disagreed with Morgan's sentiment. Penn State spokesperson Steve McCarthy said, quote, "We have met on numerous occasions with the FBI, the Ferguson Township Police Department, and the family. We have followed to the letter what to do with this," end quote. Penn State officials also cited the fact that they offered Cindy's mother an on-campus apartment with internet access when she arrived in order to aid her in the search for her daughter.
It's funny you say the name Steve McCarthy. So he was his name for anybody that followed the sex abuse case out of Penn State. Steve McCarthy's name comes up in that too.
Oh, was he the spokesperson then as well?
Sure was.
Ooh.
He was also in charge of the, what was it called? Student Auxiliary Police.
Oh, okay.
Of which I was a member. Getting back to resources, you know, Ferguson Township, for anybody that doesn't know Penn State, Penn State's in the middle of nowhere. Driving to Penn State at the time, you're driving on two-lane roads through farms, and then all of a sudden you're at Penn State, you know, that has a giant campus, lots of money, but the surrounding townships don't have a lot of money. It's mostly rural neighborhoods. Like I said, a lot of farms. So I don't know the level of resources that Ferguson Township had, but Penn State, they have a lot of money. So I tend to agree with Cindy Song's family and the Black Caucus saying that Penn State should have contributed more. You know, McCarthy saying that they
more than an apartment with yes, a T1 line.
Yeah. Well, now you're going old school, a T1 line.
Yeah, man. Well, that's what it was, wasn't it?
It was a T1 line. McCarthy saying that they followed things to the letter sounds
suspiciously similar to what he was saying during the Paterno investigation.
That
perhaps?
Is exactly what he said in the Paterno investigation.
Well, Cindy's mother, Bonsoon, was so upset with the way Ferguson Township was handling the investigation that she delivered a petition to the governor's office in Harrisburg with 15,000 signatures demanding state police take over the investigation full time.
Wow.
Which, to be quite honest, sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, yes, if Ferguson Township is basically Mayberry, like, yeah, they should probably hand this over.
Yeah, and the state police have a pretty large presence up there too. It's there are, I forget, three or four different agencies up there, but they all work together all the time.
Right. So
at every football game, there's State College PD, University Police, State Police, Ferguson Township, all working together for a football game, a home football game.
Right.
So why couldn't they work together for this?
Yeah. Yeah. And they probably were working together, but I mean, it was Ferguson Township 100% had the lead on this. Yeah. And so maybe that should not have been the case. And one would also think that shouldn't be the case because of what I'm about to tell you.
Oh boy.
In a move that seems a little retaliatory, Detective Brian Sprinkle and the Ferguson Township Police stopped communicating with the Song family. He claims that this decision was made, quote, for Cindy's sake in the case and not the family, end quote, adding, and he says this is a direct quote, we pretty much cut them off.
What? Yeah. Why?
Because he was butthurt that she put a 15,000 signature petition to the governor's office and held a press conference saying that they sucked at their jobs.
I'm floored. I don't understand that. I mean, if somebody is saying that you suck at your job during an investigation, to just completely cut them out of the investigation.
Yeah.
The
family of the victim who came from South Korea.
Yeah. Thanks for proving their point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, no one likes to be called ineffective at a press conference. I mean, I would definitely also hate that. But I also can't imagine many situations in which the family of a girl who has been missing for 3 months at this point with no solid leads would not be upset and wondering if everything has been done in her case. Again, all of this seems very reasonable to me from the perspective of the Song family. And cutting off communication with the family feels like they're making this about them instead of about Cindy.
Right. Yeah. Cutting communications with the family does not help Cindy in any level of investigation.
So just to give you a little more context on the contentious relationship between the Song family and the police tasked with finding Cindy, Detective Sprinkle said of the family, quote, "It's a cultural thing. I mean, they were upset and frustrated. They didn't understand how things worked here in the U.S., end quote.
Creating more of a divide.
Right, right.
That's really going to help.
Yeah. And I mean, part of the thing that the Korean Student Union, the Black Caucus, her family said is that she's Asian. You're not putting as many resources behind this as if she were a white girl. And so when the lead detective comes out and says, oh, it's cultural, they don't understand how things work here, like, that is not helpful.
No, it's proving their point again.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to have a better spokesperson other than the lead detective. If that's like, what he's saying,
he keeps on giving these quotes.
Yeah, then Ferguson Township needs to tell him to shut up and put somebody else out there with like official statements.
Yeah.
That have been reviewed by somebody other than Detective Sprinkle.
Yeah, in any case, Cindy did not come home after that press conference at the beginning of 2002. In fact, there would be no new news about her case until the end of that year when she was featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
I'm strong. I'm beautiful. I can do anything I want.
The words of Cindy Song, posted to her personal website 8 months before her scheduled graduation from Penn State University in May 2002. A day that would celebrate a lifelong dream.
Following this segment, many tips were called in, but none led anywhere. It wouldn't be until the next year that this case would go down a darker path than anyone expected. In June of 2003, 5 bodies were found on the Wilkes-Barre property of a man named Hugo Selensky. A man named Paul Weekly, who was alleged to be Selensky's accomplice, told police that Selensky had bragged about killing over 20 people, and one of them was Cindy Song.
I do remember that.
Okay, you do.
Yeah.
Well, this is after college, and you were living back in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Investigators from Ferguson Township went up to interview Weekly, who claimed that Selensky, a convicted bank robber and a friend, pharmacist Michael Jason Kirkowski Jr., had been in State College the night Cindy disappeared. Weekly says that Selensky and Kirkowski saw Cindy walking alone in her bunny costume, mistook her for a prostitute, and kidnapped her. Yeah, I know. So that is why I wanted to put such emphasis on Cindy's outfit, because she was not dressed in something that would make a reasonable person think that she's a prostitute. She looked like a college student.
Also, anybody that's gone to Penn State, there's no prostitutes.
No random streetwalkers in State College.
No. This is a rural area.
Yeah. So I'm sure there are sex workers. Because there are
sex workers everywhere. But you don't see them strolling down. There's 2 main streets in State College.
But that was Weekly's story. And according to him, the pair drove her 200 miles back to Selensky's property in Wilkes-Barre and held her captive for several days, assaulting her before finally murdering her. Weekly even said that they kept Cindy's bunny ears as a souvenir. Nearly 2 years after Cindy's disappearance, investigators finally feel that they're getting somewhere. Selensky didn't admit to the murder, and investigators couldn't interview Kirkowski because he was among the 5 bodies that were found at Selensky's property.
Hmm.
Yeah. While everyone was hopeful that this lead would give a resolution to Cindy's story, it just wasn't meant to be. 4 of the 5 bodies were identified. But the one unidentified body was ruled out to be Cindy.
Presumably through DNA of some sort.
Later, as authorities investigated Weekly further, they found evidence on his computer that he had done searches on Cindy Song's case. So without a body or any other evidence linking Selensky to Cindy's disappearance, police eventually discount Weekly's story. But all hope may not be lost.
That's also typical of serial killer behavior, to try and brag or boast about who they've killed and how many people they've killed.
Right. And often they inflate
right.
their numbers.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, maybe Zelensky did tell this story and did say that he killed Cindy, but maybe he just said that because it was a high profile case.
Right. And he wants to get his name out there.
Right.
Yeah.
So though those bodies, those five bodies, were found in 2003, Hugo Zelensky wouldn't get convicted of murdering Michael Krakowski and his girlfriend, Tammy Fassett, who is one of the other five bodies, until 2015.
Wow. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. So Zelensky was convicted of lesser charges related to the bodies of two local drug dealers that were also found on his property. Now, all five of these bodies that were found were partially burned. And Zelensky went on trial for killing two of the people who, like I said, were local drug dealers, but the jury came to the conclusion that there was enough evidence that he burned the bodies and buried them, but couldn't actually prove that he pulled the trigger. So he didn't get convicted of murder. He got convicted of like tampering with bodies or I don't know, just like I said, some lesser charge.
Body mutilation or
something. But here's where things get a little bonkers. Zelensky's original lawyer and a private investigator were charged with witness intimidation and bribery. A reporter for the Morning Call dug up the grand jury findings from this case and found this on page one. Quote, authorities have linked the discovery of approximately a dozen deceased / destroyed human bodies at a Luzerne County residence to Zelensky. Then on page five, it says, quote, Luzerne County authorities believe that Zelensky was directly involved in the murder of approximately 12 human beings found burned and buried in a pit in his backyard. Yeah, and this was only uncovered because of this other trial about his first lawyer bribing people, and it was in the grand jury testimony.
So were there five bodies or were there 12?
There were 12.
So why was it reported that there were only five?
Because I guess at first they only found five and then maybe they went back and found more or something. I don't know. But yeah, there were 12 bodies. And we know who four of the bodies belong to. We don't know who the fifth one is, but we know it's not Cindy. But what about all the other bodies? There are seven more.
Right.
Yeah, we don't know. None of those bodies has been publicly identified. According to that 2014 Morning Call article, authorities, including District Attorney Stephanie Salvantes, declined to comment because there is a gag order on the case.
Why is there a gag order on the case?
I don't know. Why are there seven bodies that nobody seems to want to find out about?
I still want to know about the gag order.
Yeah. Well, so that's one of the new criticisms. So, you know, obviously there are a lot of criticisms about the way this case has been handled since day one. And now there are a lot of things where people are saying that there's just weird amounts of secrecy surrounding things, that this whole Zelensky part of it is bonkers. And police do still consider him to be a person of interest, even though they couldn't find any direct proof based on just Weekly's story.
We have seven bodies, presumably, or at least that came up in grand jury testimony. We don't know anything else about it.
Like, yeah.
Why have they not been tested using DNA? Why is there secrecy? Why is there a gag order? I mean, I can understand if it's still an open investigation, but if you have seven bodies.
Yeah. And it seems as though the first five bodies were identified relatively quickly. So, again, I don't know. I don't understand what's going on with the seven bodies and why they haven't been. Because from what it sounds like, these bodies were discovered like back in 2003. As it stands today, Zelensky's in prison. Cindy's still missing. There are seven unidentified bodies. But we have no idea if he was involved in her death or if any or who was.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a red herring.
It absolutely could be because, again, there's no physical evidence actually connecting him, just the fact that there's a serial killer who was operating at the same time nearby. So the other thing that was leading police to maybe discount Zelensky's involvement in Cindy's death is that the murders that he committed were money-driven. The two drug dealers that were found on his property, apparently there was some sort of dispute there that had to do with money. I can't remember if they stole from him or it was something along, or he wanted to steal from them, but it was basically, it was money motivated. And then his friend who he murdered along with his girlfriend, Michael Krakowski, he was a pharmacist and they had some pill operation going on. And Krakowski had, like, I think it was $30,000 that Zelensky was trying to get a hold of. And that's what led to the murder of Krakowski and his girlfriend.
Right. So Cindy's case doesn't fit his MO.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Unless you take that big leap, judging from her diary, that maybe she went out to score some pot or some ecstasy from this guy who
lived 200 miles away.
Right.
Yeah.
That seems pretty far stretched.
Right. Recently, Zelensky, who is still in prison, appealed his conviction, claiming ineffective assistance of counsel, but his case was denied in February of this year. And that's the last Cindy Song-related news story that we have. He remains in prison serving a life sentence, and Cindy Song remains missing. Since November 1st, 2001. She would be 40 years old today. If you have any information on what happened to her, please contact the Ferguson Township Police Department at 814-237-1172. You can see all of the sources for this episode in our show notes and on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us.
We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast, and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.